We have to understand that there's been a shift in understanding of heart disease over the years, that we know now it's a chronic inflammatory condition that is exacerbated by something called insulin resistance, which we talked about on the show before, which is related to poor lifestyle. Now, what this abstract has shown, what this research has shown, is that markers associated with increasing the risk of heart attack and probably even progression of underlying heart disease in people who have already got some heart disease has been significantly increased risk from 11% at 5 years, risk of heart attack, to 25%. Now, that's a huge increase. If this is true, then it's very concerning indeed. But in medicine, in good science, we never rely on one study. We need to replicate these findings. However, what I will share with you today on GB News is a few days ago, after this was published, somebody from a very prestigious British institution, cardiology department, researcher, a whistleblower, if you like, contacted me to say that the researchers in this department had found something similar within the coronary arteries linked to the vaccine, inflammation from imaging studies around the coronary arteries. And they had a meeting, and these researchers at the moment have decided they're not going to publish their findings because they are concerned about losing research money from the drug industry. Now, this person was very upset about it, and I wanted to obviously share this on GB News today. What I would say is that we then, knowing this information, which is very concerning, Stephen Gundry's paper in Circulation, and also anecdotal evidence. I mean, I have a lot of interaction with the cardiology community across the UK. And anecdotally, I've been getting told by colleagues that they are seeing younger and younger people coming in with heart attacks.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is going to be a very empowering hour. We're going to take you to some deep levels of understanding the true science behind COVID. And it has nothing to do with the commercial and capitalist science that you're being told about. But on one hand, we control the truth because it comes from independent science and clinical experience. They control the agenda. They control all the governmental agencies, the World Health Organization. They control all the media. They control all of the medical and scientific community, except for those who've sought the truth and are no longer associated. For example, after health and nutrition, which we're going to do in a moment, we're going to take a look at a person who is very popular on the internet, Jimmy Dore. Interesting, because Dore is talking about Fauci being a liar. Not just a liar, but also a conniver of the worst type. Now, he's using as part of his evidence an interview that I did with Dr. Kerry Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering the PCR. Now, I didn't know it, but that had gone viral worldwide. Millions and millions of people have watched that video on different sites. So today, we're taking that full video, an hour and 54 minutes, and posting it on prn.fm and garynall.com. And you'll see all the people, just thousands of people, making positive comments about it. Wow, it's as if this was happening today. One of the comments was interesting. It said that if Dr. Kerry Mullis were alive today, there'd be no pandemic. I believe that's absolutely true. And unfortunately, he died just as the pandemic was getting underway, because he would have been on this show. He was a friend of mine. And he would have challenged Fauci, and he would have challenged the mainstream media. But that wasn't to be. Others, however, have stepped forward to make that challenge, legitimate challenges. I'm going to name the people fighting on your behalf today, people you've never heard of, but they're out there doing the original research. They're sharing this information with colleagues, medical doctors to medical doctors, showing the clinical experience of saving lives if you treat early and aggressively with FDA-approved drugs and supplements like vitamin C, zinc, and magnesium, vitamin A, and quercetin, and vitamin magnesium. You put all those together with drugs, and it works. But Jimmy Dore is going to do a good piece. It's interesting that all these people keep using my film interview. I mean, all over, every documentary's got it in, it seems, but they never say that it's my film that did it. Anyhow, that's what it is. But at least it's getting out there. Then we're going to hear from a doctor that you should pay very, a teacher, professor, you should pay very close attention to. This was done 10 months ago. I was the only program, radio program, that I'm aware of to put him on the air. He is one of the world's leading vaccine proponents. He develops vaccines for decade after decade after decade for major pharmaceutical companies. He's associated with Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Gavi, World Health Organization. So he's at the top of the pyramid when it comes to knowing about vaccine safety and efficacy and promoting them, developing them. He's a scientist. So why would he state stop on this vaccine? Just stop. It's not for everyone. In fact, the vast majority of people shouldn't have it. Why? What he said then, I stated on my show, was a hypothesis, meaning something to explore, something to open up a dialogue, a debate on. If he was true, we're looking at massive genocide, epic, never before in human history, never. If he's wrong, okay, he's wrong, and that will go against him making any further statements. Dale Bigtree, who did the movie Vaxxed, he showed this segment and commented on it. Now, I believe that Dale went over a line to what he cannot prove, but it's worth you listening and watching what he has to say, because he's saying what happens to your natural immunity, what you have right now going on in your body that protects you 24/7, your innate immune system. All right? When I've overworked myself, which I did for the last month, 20 hours a day, finishing up two documentaries, writing a new book, doing six investigative journalist reports, doing four webinars and lectures. I was literally exhausted. When I felt my immune system going down at 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up and says, got to deal with it. And I immediately fed my innate immune system what it needed to help itself. And so now I'm feeling great. And in fact, I just went out and had my COVID test taken an hour ago, negative, of course. And because I'm paying attention, your innate immune system, that's what protects you against cancer or causes cancer when you've defeated it, when you've let it down, when you haven't supported it. So he's saying that with this vaccine, all of them, the RNA vaccines, is going to handicap your natural immune system from fighting on your behalf. It will actually encourage more of the virus, the COVID virus, into your body. And that's going to cause a lot of people to get sick and die. Now, he was the only one saying it. But now, that was 10 months ago, it's coming true. The number one spreaders of COVID are the vaccinated. The number one spreaders of the variants, the vaccinated. The number one people going to hospitals now, the vaccinated. The number one people dying in hospital after being vaccinated, the vaccinated. So, the number one group of people who are getting sick with a heart condition, the vaccinated. Now, as we finished our music, you saw a doctor being interviewed. He is a mainstream, highly respected, revered, actually, cardiologist in Great Britain, professor, author, clinician. Now, he is the mainstream, and yet you saw him risking his career to come forward and say, as a cardiologist, now listen carefully what that video told you. A group of scientists conducted a study on vaccinated young people, and they found that all these young people, a lot of them, were having heart disease, heart attacks and strokes and dying. And the people who did the study knew this and refused to publish the article. Why? It would interfere in their funding. That's correct. We know the truth. People getting this vaccine, it can injure the heart permanently. But we're going to cover it up. We're not going to tell you the truth. That is serious. That's from a mainstream person. He had the courage to tell the truth. There are others telling the truth, but the American media won't touch that. They won't interview him. They'll attack him. He'll be gaslighted. He'll be destroyed. You heard it. You saw it first on this program today. Share it. So Jimmy Dore is going to talk about Fauci, and then we're going to hear from the other doctor, scientist, talking about the vaccine and now what we're actually seeing. Can we stop it? No, we cannot. Can we reverse course? We will not reverse course. Will we tell people who shouldn't get the vaccine not to get it? No, we're going to tell everyone to get it, even if they have a medical condition, even if they're a baby, get the vaccine. The world has gone mad. Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci and all the other supplicants and sycophants, everyone profiting from it, will just go forward. Even in Europe, they want to make it mandatory and get rid of the Nuremberg Code of Ethics. That's our program today. Oh, and by the way, here's Robert Kennedy's new book, The Real Anthony Fauci. I'm going to read you 3 pages for all of you, especially those of you at Pacifica and different stations who refuse to deal with this. You know, COVID's, you know, the answer to COVID is vaccines and remdesivir, the drug Fauci promotes. You are wrong on everything. Unfortunately, you are also shameless. You're guileless. You're anti-intellectual. You're anti-real science. You're a propagandist. I'm going to show you today, and every day, I'm going to read just a couple pages from this amazing book that every American should read. You won't read it, of course. You'd want it burned. Yeah, along with Elizabeth Warren wanting it burned and banned. This is the truth. This is science. The footnotes in here, the team of lawyers that went over this and vetted it. But from my own independent investigation, it is accurate. That's our program. Let's begin. Talking about health, successful aging can be the norm, so says a UCLA psychology professor, Ann Castell. He says that there are lots of myths about aging that we know, and people often have negative stereotypes of what it means to get old. He says he studied aging for 20 years, and he's seen many impressive role models for aging, as well as people who struggle in older age. Happiness increases our lives by up to 10 years, a recent research review suggested. As an added bonus, those additional years are likely to be happy ones. I agree with all that. Let me add this in as a little extension. I've been in the field of anti-aging science, public health, for a long time. Many of the things that many people do each day might come from the research I've done and presented in PBS documentaries, the most successful documentary in their history and fundraising up to that point was my film and presentation on How to Live Forever. Millions, tens of millions of people watched it, and many people are applying those principles. Now, I couldn't get into everything. It's just too big a topic. But here are the 5 pillars. First, a foundation in your life of happiness. But that in itself requires you to understand who are you as an individual. What is your purpose in life beyond having a career, having a family? There's something still important in that. Find that. And that's in itself is a topic, but finding who you actually are, what you're meant to do in this life, that establishes happiness. Learn not to personalize everything. Learn not to live with drama and crisis as the merit badges of that because you've suffered in life, somehow that allows you to stay in a negative mindset, critical and almost with constant existential angst, because you will not live a long life. You'll make misery of the company that you keep, and you'll walk around with a dark shadow over you. Happiness, lighten your life. Look for the hope in all things. Look for the benefit in all lessons. Even negative experiences have positive outcomes if you learn the lessons so you don't repeat it. Next is make your choices as if this was your last day of life, and that choice could save it and have another day to live. So therefore, don't just assume that you can have those French fries, the hamburgers, the pizzas, the hot dogs, the alcohol, the heavy alcohol, spend your time in front of a mindless television set watching these reality shows or pay attention to the dark news, which is always terrible. No, clear that out. We can see the obvious hoarders, those on television that you walk into their house and there's no place to step. We can see that. What about emotional hoarding? Never heard of that term. Why? Because I was thinking about that and I'm making it into a new lecture. emotional hoarding, where we hoard memories that are negative, experiences that were destructive, traumatic, and we hoard them to where there's nothing else left in our life. Everywhere we look, there's something to saying no, guilt, shame, anger, and insecurity, uncertainty. Then what in the world are you going to do? You're not going to do a healthy lifestyle. You're not going to do a healthy diet. You're not going to go exercise because you've got an excuse not to. Therefore, uncluttering, cleansing out the mind through various techniques is another one of those steps. Then taking everything into your body that actually feeds the body's immune system, feeds the cells, cleanses the cells, and rejuvenates stem cells. And that includes the paying attention to your telomerase, your anti-aging connections. Then exercise. Exercise every day. If you just did those things alone, you could live 30 extra years, healthy years. So that's important. And I've seen people in my audience, in fact, a doctor, Dr. Raphael Feldman, who I know for a long time, good holistic doctor, called me the other day. He had two people in his office. They were both in their mid-90s, outstandingly healthy. And he called, he said, just because these two patients of mine have been on your protocol for decades, and they just want to say how thankful they are that they're healthy and alive and vital and living their lives as if they were in their 30s, in their mid-90s. I have a lot of people like that in their 90s, 80s, 70s, and 60s who feel great. You too could do that, but you got to give up something. You got to surrender the negative in order to embrace the positive. And also, I want to get to these other clips, so I'm going to do just one more on health. This is from Boston University. It shows that potatoes, especially red and purple potatoes, and orange potatoes, that'd be your sweet potatoes, can be enjoyed as part of a healthy diet and not associated with elevated heart health risk factors. And so that's important because a lot of people, and this was published in the British Medical Journal. So a lot of people don't eat potatoes, think, oh, they're just fattening. Well, French fries are anything that's cooked and browned, but cooked properly, potatoes can be extremely healthy. They have also alpha lipoic acid, which is important. And so now we're going directly to Jimmy Dore.
Now, one of the frequent topics of this show is this guy Fauci, and because everyone worships him like he's some kind of good Samaritan. He's a tool of Big Pharma, and he's a pathological liar, and he lied to Congress, and he should be prosecuted and in prison. And he's failed us over COVID time and time again. And so he's been rightfully criticized. We've caught him lying three big times. We've caught him personally here at this show lying three hoots. He lied about masks. He lied. He admitted he lied about it. I'm going to show you that. He lied about herd immunity. He lied about it and then admitted he lied about it. And then he lied about funding gain of function research in Wuhan. He hasn't admitted he lied about that, but he did. So those are the three big, huge lies we caught. And so people criticize him because he's had a very poor handling of COVID. And this is his response. Watch this.
It seems another layer of danger to play politics around matters of life and death.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And to me, that's unbelievably bad because all I want to do is save people's lives.
That's all he wants to do.
Anybody who's looking at this carefully realizes that there's a distinct anti-science flavor to this.
Oh.
So if they get up and criticize science, nobody's going to know what they're talking about. But if they get up and really aim their bullets at Tony Fauci, well, people could recognize there's a person there, so it's easy to criticize. But they're really criticizing science because I represent science.
You're really criticizing science. And I guess you're not supposed to ever criticize science. So we were never supposed to question Newton's ideas. We never supposed to adopt Einstein. Isn't that how science works, by questioning it? Of course, that's how it works. You're supposed to question science and challenge it all the time. That's why stuff is peer reviewed. You never stop asking questions of science. You never stop trying to knock it down. You never stop trying to add on. And I'm a comedian, and I know that. I'm a dumb comedian, and I know that. I mean, he's saying you can't question science. That's what he's saying. Well, how are we going to invent the next asbestos? Or how about the next atom bomb? How about DDT? If you don't question science, where are we going to get all those great things? Where are we going to get asbestos from? For the love of children, spare a thought for SpaceX. So he's got a little more to say.
That's dangerous. To me, that's more dangerous than the slings and the arrows that get thrown at me. And if you damage science, you are doing something very detrimental to society long after I leave.
So he's saying any criticism of him is doing damage to science, and it's anti-science. It has an anti-science flavor. You heard him say that. So any criticism of him is doing damage to science, and how dare you? So what he is doing is using the term science as a shield from criticism. He's using it as a cudgel against his political enemies. That's what he's using science for right now, which is insidious and nefarious. And you want to know how I can prove it? I'll prove it to you right now. Because in the Newsweek, establishment rag Newsweek, there was this article, How Fauci Fooled America, in Newsweek. And who wrote it? A couple of comedians, maybe? Who wrote it? Well, for what they say, they said, unfortunately, Dr. Fauci got major epidemiology and public health questions wrong. Reality and scientific studies have now caught up with him.
Interesting comments. Now, show where he's wrong. Try to deconstruct his arguments. You don't have to accept or reject something. You can look at it and say, okay, if I try to deconstruct this, how much of these are going to be beneficial? Oh, by the way, I forgot there was another study. It dealt with the golden chanterelle mushroom, and it's an edible fungus, and it's been shown in a study from Mazandaran University of Medical Sciences in Iran to hasten all wound healing. Just something to share with you. By the way, Northumbria University in the United Kingdom says that foods high in anthocyanins, grapes, blackberries, blueberries, pomegranates, are great for lowering cardiovascular death rates. So you want to reduce your risk of disease and death from cardiovascular conditions? Have more berries. Now, as you see here, I have the real Anthony Fauci. I'm going to read just a few pages of this to show you what you didn't know. Keep in mind what I'm about to read is where Bill Gates was taking over, along with Anthony Fauci, the war on AIDS by promising there would be vaccines for AIDS. Of course, there have been over 100 vaccines. Not a single one has worked. Here's what Robert Kennedy Jr. says on page 298 of his new book, The Real Anthony Fauci. Quote, in March 2020, Bill Gates stepped down from his position on the board of directors at Microsoft, explaining that he was, quote, now spending the predominant amount of his time on the pandemic. Gates celebrated his Microsoft retirement by directing a river of money to build 6 manufacturing plants for different COVID vaccines and funding vaccine trials by companies like Inovio Pharmaceuticals, AstraZeneca, and Moderna, Inc., all front-running companies in the race to develop a COVID vaccine. The Gates Foundation also invested $480 million in a wide range of vaccine candidates and platform technologies through the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness, which Gates founded with Wellcome Trust Director Jeremy Farrar. Tony Fauci, meanwhile, took over managing the White House Coronavirus Task Force. The two men played tag team on the evening news and Sunday talk shows to promote remdesivir and to let their host and the American people know that the only way to end the global hostage crisis was compliance by 7 billion people with their new vaccines. No one ever questioned Gates's mantric pronouncement, which he repeated like a Gregorian chant. Quote, realistically, if we're going to return to normal, we need to develop a safe, effective vaccine. We need to make billions of doses. We need to get them out to every part of the world. And we need all this to happen as quickly as possible, end quote. He reiterated this version and others nonstop. Quote on CNN, things won't go back to truly normal until we have a vaccine and that we've gotten out to basically the entire world, end quote. But back to HIV. But despite all the excitement about COVID, neither of these partners forgot their first love, AIDS. On February 9, 2021, with his Operation Warp Speed vaccine rollout approaching the finishing line, Dr. Tony Fauci took a well-earned breather to make an exciting announcement. He told his giddy media acolytes that the National Institutes of Health had just committed to a $200 million joint initiative with the Gates Foundation to fund the next generation of AIDS vaccines using National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease new RNA technology. Quote, this collaboration is an ambitious step forward, harnessing the most cutting-edge scientific tools and National Institutes of Health's sizable global HIV research infrastructure to one day deliver a cure and end the global HIV pandemic, end quote. Ignoring 40 years of abysmal failure, the National Institutes of Health director, Francis C. Collins, MD, PhD, who plays Robin to Dr. Fauci's Batman, added, quote, we aim to think go big or go home. That thrilling announcement occurred almost exactly 40 years after the first report of AIDS. After four decades of cataclysmic outcomes, billions of squandered dollars, untold lives lost, and failed promises, the press corps gave this most recent production the same rapt and credulous applause with which they greeted Teflon Tony's 100 other indistinguishable pronouncements over four decades. Quote, he's the P.T. Barnum of public health, Marvel journalist Celia Farber. Quote, he craps his wick and says abracadabra, and they all forgot that they've seen the same trick so many times, it's really quite astonishing. By then, Fauci and Gates' arsenal of COVID pokes were topping the all-time charts for medical money-making by their pharmaceutical partners, with Pfizer alone projecting $96 billion in COVID vaccine sales. Moderna followed up Dr. Fauci's appearance with a press release announcing new RNA vaccine for Zika, Ebola, flu, cancer, and HIV. On July 25, 2021, Dr. Fauci expanded on this exciting communique by announcing a new multi-billion dollar government initiative to use taxpayer money and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease patented RNA technology to predict, prepare direct new vaccines for 20 families of viruses that might spark future pandemics. Dr. Fauci disclosed that he was already in discussion with the Biden White House about his electrifying proposal, which he said will, quote, cost a few billion dollars, a few billion, on top of the $6 billion of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease budget. He said he planned to launch the project in 2022. Dr. Collins said he found Dr. Fauci's proposal compelling, scolding that, quote, as we begin to contemplate a successful end to the COVID pandemic, we must not slip back into complacency. On September 2nd, 2021, Joe Biden came through for Dr. Fauci again, announcing a $65 billion pandemic response effort. Dr. Fauci will be his point man. Biden's announcement eclipsed some bad sad news. On August 31st, Dr. Fauci acknowledged their premature termination of yet another of his African HIV vaccine experiments, a large trial of 2,600 African girls of a Johnson & Johnson HIV vaccine funded jointly by Fauci's group and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation had failed to demonstrate a beneficial effect. Rudyard Kipling originally coined the term white man's burden in his 1897 poem, exhorting the moral imperative of the United States and England to impose Western civilizations and Christianity on their tribal peoples for their own good, of course. Every student of African history is familiar with the reoccurring themes of well-intentioned white men visiting calamity on Africans. And then it goes into Gates' HIV vaccine and antiviral program is due to its continent-wide scale, arguably the worst in a long parade of paternalistic Western schemes by imperialists and adventurers, scammers, schemers, charlatans, double-dealing rogues, and well-meaning dolts who regularly pledge to end African suffering. Instead of approaching Africa with humility, curiosity, open ears, and a willingness to support local initiatives, Bill Gates leads with the same Weizenmeyer arrogance that Judge Penfield Jackson pegged as Gates' defining character trait in his 1998 trial ruling. At best, Gates and Fauci are just the latest in a long line of crusaders, con artists, and conquistadors who periodically appear on the continent armed with the conviction that they know what's best for Africans. Too often, these are self-serving, one-size-fits-all vanity projects that in the end only compound calamity and magnify suffering. At worst, in the words of Lofredo and Greenstein, Gates and his foundation function, quote, as a Trojan horse for Western corporations, which of course have no goal greater than increased bottom line. The foundation appears to see the global South, meaning Africa, as both a dumping ground for drugs deemed too unsafe for the developed world, and a testing ground for drugs not yet determined to be safe enough for the developed world. Magical vaccines are Gates's preeminent cookie-cutter solution for the ills of poverty, famine, drought, and disease. The absurdity of expensive shots as a remedy as a salve for malnutrition or the death of potable water is obvious when one considers 3 billion people live on less than $2 a day, 800 million and 840 million don't have enough to eat, 1 billion lack clean water or access to sanitation, 1 billion are illiterate. About a quarter of the children in poor countries do not finish primary school. Poverty is a target-rich environment, but the data suggests that Gates vaccines miss the target altogether. A sociologist, Lindsay McGoey, quotes a young health researcher based at the University of Cape Coast on the Western Ghana. Quote, from my point of view, it's more like the Gates Foundation are selling technology that rather than solving problems. Most of their calls have to do with developing new technology or vaccines. But here's the most important part in this read. So this is what I want you to pay careful attention to. Because those of you who are the pro-vaccine without question and are anti and vehemently anti anyone who has chosen for whatever religion or reason not to vaccinate, this is where you got to learn a lesson in humility if you're capable of doing that. Quote, how Gates controls the World Health Organization. Worst, Gates has used his money strategically to infect the international aid agencies with his distorted, self-serving priorities. The United States historically has been the largest direct donor to the World Health Organization with a contribution of $604 million in 2018 and 19. This year, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation gave $431 million and Gavi gave $316 million, which Gavi was created by Bill Gates and controlled by Bill Gates. Plus, Gates also routes funding to World Health Organization through SAGE and UNICEF and Rotary International, bringing his cumulative total contributions to over $1 billion, making Gates the unofficial top sponsor of the World Health Organization even before the Trump administration's 2020 move to cut off all of its support to the organization. Those $1 billion tax-deductible donations give Gates leverage and control over World Health Organization's $5.6 billion budget and over international health policy, which he largely directs to serve the profit interest of his pharmaceutical partners. Pharmaceutical companies cement World Health Organization's institutional bias toward vaccines with approximately $70 million of their own direct contributions. Quote, our priorities are our priorities, end quote, Gates declared in 2011. In 2012, the World Health Organization's then Director General Margaret Chan complained that because the World Health Organization budget is highly earmarked, it is driven by what she calls donor interest. And according to its charter, the World Health Organization is meant to be accountable to member governments. The Gates Foundation, on the other hand, is accountable to no one other than its three trustees, Bill Gates, Melinda Gates, and Berkshire Hathaway's CEO, Warren Buffett. Many civil society organizations fear the World Health Organization's independence is compromised when a significant portion of its budget comes from a private philanthropic organization with the power to stipulate exactly where and how the UN institution spends its money. Virtually every single and significant decision at the World Health Organization is first vetted by Bill Gates Foundation. Did you know that? People didn't. As UK-based NGO Global Justice Now told Greystone, that's Max Blumenthal, quote, "The foundation's influence is so pervasive that many actors in international development which would otherwise critique the policy and practice of the foundation are unable to speak out independently as a result of its funding and patronage." All right. Gates's vaccine obsession has diverted World Health Organization giving away from poverty alleviation, nutrition, and clean water to make vaccine updates its preeminent public health metric. And Gates is not afraid to throw his weight around. In 2011, Gates spoke at the World Health Organization ordering that, quote, "all 193 member states must make vaccines a central focus of their health policy systems," end quote. The following year, the World Health Assembly, which sets the World Health Organization agenda, adopted, quote, "a global vaccine plan that the Gates Foundation co-authored. Over half the World Health Organization's total budget now goes to vaccines. That narrow focus on inoculations is deepening Africa's health crisis, according to global health experts and African officials. Their control of several billion dollars in annual inputs gives Gates and Fauci effective control, not only over the World Health Organization, but also the retinue of authoritative quasi-governmental agencies that Gates, often with Fauci's assistance and support, created and or funded, including CEPI, Gavi, PATH, UNITAID, UNICEF, SAGE, the Global Development Program, the Global Fund, the Brighton Collaboration, and government health ministries in dozens of African nations that are largely dependent upon the World Health Organization and other global health partnerships. A 2017 analysis of 23 global health partnerships revealed that 7 were entirely dependent upon Gates's funding, and another 9 list the foundation as its top donor. The Gates Foundation also controls the strategic adversary group of experts, SAGE, the principal adversary group to the World Health Organization for vaccines. During a recent meeting, half of SAGE's governing board of 15 people listed conflicts of interest with the Gates Foundation. The most powerful of these groups is Gavi, G-A-V-I, the second largest non-state funder of the World Health Organization. Gates created Gavi, quote, "as a public-private partnership that facilitates bulk sales of vaccines from his pharma partners to poor countries." Gavi is the template for Gates's impressive capacity to use his celebrity, credibility, and wealth to mesmerize key public officials and heads of state and to giving Gates control over their foreign aid spending. Gates launched Gavi in 1999 with a $750 million donation. The Bill Melinda Gates Foundation occupies a permanent seat on the Gavi's board. Other organizations that Gates controls or can rely upon, the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and the World Bank, and the pharmaceutical industry occupy additional seats, giving Gates dictatorial authority over Gavi's decision-making. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has donated a total of $4.1 billion to Gavi to date, but Gates has used that relatively trivial contribution and his personal charm, I suppose, to attract over $16 billion from government and private donors, including $1.6 billion annually from the U.S. government, 5 times the amount that Gates donates to the World Health Organization. Additionally, the sheer magnitude of his foundation's financial contributions has made Bill Gates an unofficial, albeit unelected, leader of the World Health Organization. By 2017, Gates's power was so complete that he handpicked his deputy, Tedros, as the World Health Organization's new director general, despite complaints that Tedros would be the first director general to the World Health Organization without any medical degrees or any degrees at all in public health science. And he has a very dubious background. Critics credibly charged Tedros with running a terror group associated with extreme human rights violations, including genocidal policies against a rival tribal group in Ethiopia. As Ethiopia's foreign minister, Tedros aggressively suppressed freedom of speech, including arresting and jailing journalists who criticized his party's policies. Tedros' key qualification for the World Health Organization gig was his loyalty to Gates. Tedros previously served on the boards of two organizations that Gates funded and controls, Gavi and the Global Fund, where Tedros was Gates' trusted chair of the board. Gavi is the most tangible outcome of the partnership. Gates sealed with Fauci in early 2000. Under the terms of the partnership, Fauci greenhouses a pipeline of new vaccines in the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease Laboratories and farms them out for cultivation and clinical trials by his university, PIs, and the pharmaceutical multinationals in which Gates holds high investment stakes. Gates then builds out supply chains and creates innovative financial devices for guaranteeing those companies' markets in third world countries. A key feature of this scheme is Gates' capacity through the World Health Organization to pressure developing countries to expedite and purchase the vaccine and use Gavi as a bank through which wealthy countries co-sign the debt. Western nations once funneled their foreign aid through traditional NGOs for food and economic development. Gates has captured those deal flows for Gavi and his pharma partners by pressuring Western countries to fork over their foreign aid to Gavi. Gates thereby hijacks the foreign assistance money from wealthy governments, diverting it to his drug makers. In May 2012, following two meetings with Gavi CEO Dr. Seth Berkley, Fauci candidly described the close relationship between Gavi and the National Institute of Health. Quote, "We, the National Institute of Health, work on the upstream component of the fundamental research development. Gavi develops a vaccine and gets it into the arms of people who need them," end quote. Dr. Fauci explained that while the National Institute of Health is way up in the upstream and Gavi is way down in the downstream, there is no daylight between Gates Foundation and his agency. Western nations originally conceived the World Health Organization and the United Nations to embody liberal ideologies implemented via a democratic structure of one nation, one vote. India's leading human rights activist, Dr. Vandana Shiva, told me, quote, "Gates has single-handedly destroyed all that. He has hijacked the World Health Organization and transformed it into an instrument of personal power that he wields for the cynical purpose of increasing pharmaceutical profits. He has single-handedly destroyed the infrastructure of public health globally. He has privatized health systems and our food systems to serve his own purposes." As Jeremy Lafredo and Michael Greenstein conceded in their July 2020 article, the Gates Foundation has already effectively privatized the international body charged with creating health policy, transforming it into a vehicle for corporate dominance. It has facilitated the dumping of toxic products onto the people of the global south and even used the world's poor as guinea pigs for drug experimentation. The Gates Foundation influence over public health policy is practically contingent on ensuring that safety regulations and other government functions are weak enough to be circumvented. It operates against the independence of nation states and is a vehicle of Western worlds. Now then it gets into patents. That's a singular feature of Gates' vaccine caper, largely unnoticed until recently by the global press, is his ironclad commitment to protect pharmaceutical companies' intellectual property rights. Asked in a Sky News interview if sharing intellectual property and the recipe for vaccines would be helpful, Gates replied bluntly, no. Quote, "There's all sorts of issues around intellectual property having to do with medicines, but not in terms of how quickly we've been able to ramp up the volume here. I do a regular phone call," listen to this, quote, "I do a regular phone call with the pharmaceutical CEOs to make sure that work is going at full speed." In April 2021, his unyielding allegiance to patent rights and corporate profits finally caused cracks to appear in the monolithic support for Gates among mainstream media and the public health departments. I'll continue. Just for another page here. And this deals with blacks to the front line. As the February 2021 press conference, Francis Collins said that the National Institute of Health new generation of HIV vaccines will specifically target Africans and African Americans, quote, to make sure nobody everywhere, everybody everywhere has the opportunity to be cured, not just those in high-income countries, end quote. Such sympathies were the consistent preoccupation along the Gates National Institute of Health nexus. Melinda Gates lamented on CNN April 10, 2020, that she was, quote, kept up at night, end quote, worrying about the vulnerable populations in Africa. In June 2020, she told Time magazine that in the United States, black people should get the COVID vaccines first. The idea that blacks should be the first in line for the vaccine and official anxieties that many blacks would resist this privilege were persistent themes in the pronouncement by the leading health agencies during the pandemic. And as we shall see later, the intelligence agency, the CIA, and pharmaceutical company partners repeatedly war-gamed strategies for overcoming anticipated black resistance in many of the dozen pandemic simulations leading up to COVID-19. Once the pandemic was underway, Health and Human Services recruited black preachers, they recruited HBCU college deans, civil rights leaders, and sports figures like Hank Aaron to soften jab hesitancy in the black community. They staged press conferences and highly publicized celebrity vaccination confabs and extravagantly financed government advertising campaigns targeting blacks in both the United States and Africa. In December of 2020, Dr. Fauci scolded resistance in the black community, saying, quote, the time is now to put skepticism aside. Mm-hmm. Quote, while Cicely Tyson, Marvin Hagler, and rapper Earl Simmons, a.k.a. DMX, all died shortly after taking COVID vaccines, the medical community and the CDC rushed to assure the African-American community that the deaths were not vaccine-related. Social media and mainstream outlets censored or removed studies and stories that suggested a vaccine association. Gates-funded fact-checkers, yeah, Gates controls the fact-checkers, and their organizations, quote, debunked any link. The desperation to discredit such talk inspired many respectable media outfits to simply lie. When home run king Hank Aaron died several days after receiving a vaccine at a staged press conference at Atlanta's Morehouse College, I wrote that his death was among a wave of deaths in older people following vaccination. I never said the vaccine caused Aaron's death. The New York Times, CNN, ABC, NBC Inside Edition, and 100 news organizations across the globe rushed to castigate me and rebut my article as vaccine misinformation, assuring the public, listen to this is really important. All the mainstream media assured the public that the Fulton County coroner had declared Aaron's death, quote, unrelated to the vaccine. But when I called the Fulton County coroner, the office informed me that they had never seen Hank Aaron's body and that Aaron's family had buried him without any autopsy. After I published this embarrassing fact, not a single news organization posted a retraction. But federal law requires that every injury or death following vaccination during clinical trials or by logical extension with emergency use products must be attributed to the vaccine unless proven otherwise. Nevertheless, as of August 2021, the CDC officially took the Pollyannish view that not a single one of the 13,000 plus deaths reported to Veris following vaccination as of August 20th was vaccine related, not one. As was the case with Hank Aaron, CDC apparently did nothing to actively investigate any of these deaths, exonerating the vaccine instead of by fiat. Now, I know I did not know Hank Aaron, nor any of the other people, but I did know Cicely Tyson. And I'm only telling you this because last time I saw Cicely, she was asking about her health. She ate organic food. She juiced. She took supplements. She did de-stressing. She was an extremely productive person, very kind person. I first met her over 40 years ago, introduced by Brock Peters, who, by the way, was the co-star with Gregory Peck in To Kill a Mockingbird and many other great films. And Brock opened the door to many people within the African-American community that he knew in the 1960s that I then interviewed for the work I did called Black Hollywood, The History of the African-American Experience in Hollywood. In any case, she was ideally healthy, and she'd been on a protocol for over 40 years. But then she suddenly dies right after getting the vaccine. And yet we're told none of this had anything to do with the vaccine. Yeah. So let's just put this in perspective. The most powerful person on the planet right now is Bill Gates. The most ruthless would be in a small group would be Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci. So when you question anything about COVID, one of the responses you get is from an authoritative figure. It's either from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, Anthony Fauci, U.S. Public Health Service, which is the overarching group that Fauci's group is a part of, or the World Health Organization. Now, all those, the CDC and the FDA, all are controlled by Bill Gates. We just gave you the proof. The organizations that he creates and funds, all in this public-private partnership. So why his foundation gives away money and gets debt, that he also makes a profit, tens of billions of dollars from all this. And yet, things we knew worked, like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and monoclonal antibodies, and at least 22 other drugs, none of those are allowed to be used. In fact, you could lose your license to practice medicine if you use them. People have actually lost their positions. We've had them on this program. And yet, from the clinical background, millions of people today are alive because they use these. For example, with under 3% of the people in Africa being vaccinated, why is it that it has one of the lowest infection and death rates from COVID in the world? Because there they've been using ivermectin for parasitic infections to save their lives from malaria for at least 50 years, and they get it for free. But no one wants to look in that as an answer. In India, the largest, most populated state in all of India, with over 240 million people, had one of the highest COVID infection and death rates in the world. But then they started giving everyone a package, and in the package was ivermectin along with some other things. And now it just plummeted to literally almost zero. It's got one of the lowest rates in the world. And by the way, there's a disinformation campaign now all over the mainstream media saying that Japan did not introduce ivermectin and are still going forward with full vaccination. That is not true, and we will play you a clip from the PhD who is one of the most meticulous researchers I've ever seen, showing you that indeed they did get ivermectin. And all the studies that were challenging ivermectin, we have now collected, and we'll show you the financial conflict of interest and the organizations backing them and their political and economic connections. So we're just taking the cover back of this medical and scientific organized crime, showing you the truth. What you do with it is up to you. But just understand you have not been given the truth. You have not been told the truth about any of this. You've been lied to about everything. It's time for the truth to show its hand. Thank you all for listening and watching today. Have a nice day.